Welcome to Extraordinary. It's my mom's favorite podcast. I'm Sonny Garibay. On September 23, 1999, NASA attempted to set up its Mars Climate Orbiter above the Red Planet. The probe was supposed to collect information on the Martian atmosphere and serve as a communications relay for the Mars Global Surveyor and Mars Polar Lander. At 9 a.m. Universal Time, the orbiter began its descent, during which it disappeared behind Mars, losing communication with NASA. This was expected, but unfortunately, it never reappeared, and communication with the probe was never reestablished. After a preliminary investigation, NASA released the following statement, titled, Mars Climate Orbiter Team Finds Likely Cause of Loss. A failure to recognize and correct an error in a transfer of information between the Mars Climate Orbiter spacecraft team in Colorado and the Mission Navigation Team in California led to the loss of the spacecraft last week, preliminary findings by NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory internal peer review indicate. People sometimes make errors, said Dr. Edward Wheeler, NASA's Associate Administrator for Space Science. The problem here was not the error. It was the failure of NASA's systems engineering and the checks and balances of our process to detect the error. That's why we lost the spacecraft. The peer review preliminary findings indicate that one team used English units, inches, feet, and pounds, while the other used metric units for key spacecraft operation. This information was critical to the maneuvers required to place the spacecraft in proper Mars orbit. Our inability to recognize and correct this simple error has had major implications, said Dr. Edward Stone, director of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. We have underway a thorough investigation to understand this issue. This was an expensive lesson in attention to detail for NASA, but it's one that they didn't have to learn at all. Shortly after gaining independence from England, the United States was already considering independence from their system of measurements. But Americans, while being stubborn in general, are particularly stubborn about this subject. I'm talking the underwhelming attempts by the government on the life of the U.S. customary system and the history of the U.S. doing things the hard way when it comes to measuring things, this time on Extraordinary. John Quincy Adams was the son of United States Founding Father and Third President John Adams and his wife Abigail. He was a child during the Revolutionary War, actually watching the Battle of Bunker Hill with his mother, and witnessed soldiers marching through his town firsthand growing up. He lived in fear during this time, with his dad being guilty of treason and all, but credits this period of his life in helping him mature. Now, Johnny Q was a nerd, which is great for the rest of us nerds because it means that he really liked documenting things. Thankfully, his parents encouraged this. His mother and father taught him math and languages, and even while he was away during the Revolution, John Sr. was making book recommendations to his son in letters. He also traveled abroad with his father after the Revolution, while the elder Adams was serving as a diplomat in Europe, adding to his knowledge of language and cultures. As a nerd, John Q had some pretty strange hobbies, like measuring things. And during his time as the minister to Russia, he began researching and comparing Russian weights and measures, just for fun. Just so that you know I'm not exaggerating about his hobbies, here's what the man had to say himself. Quote, I have found by experiments, frequently repeated, that my ordinary pace is 2 feet 6 inches and 88 one-hundredths of an inch, or about 29 French inches, and that in my ordinary pace, I walk 120 steps to a minute. While he is more commonly known as a mediocre president, Adams made a name for himself as a skilled diplomat, specifically during his time as Secretary of State for President James Monroe. The United States was at a crossroad then, and his knack for diplomacy, combined with his love of measuring things, made him just the hero the country needed. Metrication is the process of switching over to the metric system. The last country to do it was the Republic of Ireland, which in 2005 marked the end of its three-decade-long ordeal. In the United States, we currently use the U.S. customary system, which is based on the old English system. It's pretty straightforward. 16 ounces make a pound, 2,000 pounds make a ton. There are 12 inches in a foot and 3 feet in a yard, 5,280 feet in a mile. All of these, of course, are very easy to remember, and Americans never get these mixed up. The units themselves were forged from the best science and mathematics available at the time. A yard was originally the length of a man's belt, but King Henry I fixed that in the 12th century when he made the official length of a yard the distance from his own nose to the thumb of his outstretched arm, about 36 inches. But the inch too was changed in the 14th century. It was initially the width of a man's thumb, before King Edward II determined that this wasn't nearly accurate enough and decreed that an inch would be equal to 3 grains of barley end to end. In contrast, the metric system emerged out of France at the tail end of the French Revolution. They used the world as their reference guide, making their standard unit, the meter, 1/10,000,000th of the distance from the equator to the North Pole, which they then used to create weights as well, inventing the gram, which was originally a unit equal to the mass of 1 cubic centimeter of water at maximum density. In 1817, Congress commissioned a report into the metric system, wanting to know whether this or some other system would be better for the new nation. John Q. worked obsessively on it for 3.5 years before finally submitting his 240-page behemoth. His dad took a look at the thing and wrote him a letter about it, saying, quote, "Though I cannot say, and perhaps shall never be able to say, that I have read it, yet I have turned over leaves of it enough to see that it is a mass of historical, philosophical, chemical, mathematical, and political knowledge which no industry in this country but yours could have collected in so short a time," end quote. We obviously don't use the metric system. So what did the report say? It started by first praising the new French system. John Quincy Adams was clearly intrigued by this proposed universal system of measurements. But then, in a great moment in American history, John Q. took a nice long look at the future and was like, "Thanks, but we're going to hang back for a little and do our own thing." In short, he decided against it because he preferred the practicality of the English system, which he felt had been perfected over hundreds of years of use. He thought that Americans would appreciate the ability to guesstimate distances based on the references they were already accustomed to, rather than a simplified base 10 system. He also doubted Congress's ability to legislate such a change, writing, quote, "In England, from the earliest records of parliamentary history, the statute books are filled with ineffectual attempts of the legislature to develop uniformity." He also drew from the experience of France, which, during the expansionary part of its revolution, had tried to force their new system on the nations they conquered. After giving up control of these areas, all but the Netherlands reverted back to their old way. He concluded, quote, "This uniformity cannot be obtained by legislation. It must be imposed by conquest or adopted by consent," end quote. But of course, we can't put the nation's decision to be different squarely on President John Q. Adams. There have been over 200 years for us to get with the program if we wanted to. And in that time, the American relationship with the metric system became more complicated as it became more widespread. Some of the first people to realize the practicality of the metric system in the United States were chemists and other scientists. And in 1866, Congress passed the Metric Act, protecting its use in business, superseding some state laws which would have prohibited it. Then in 1893, the Mendenhall Order was adopted, switching the official units used by the Office of Weights and Measures to metric, but doing nothing for the average American. And for decades after that, nothing changed. Until 1968, when Congress decided that it wanted to give the whole global standardization thing another look and commissioned the U.S. Metric Study. The 3-year-long study recommended that the country gradually adopt the metric system over a 10-year period, and the U.S. Metric Board was born, which would oversee such a switch. After the Watergate scandal, the movement to go metric gained a powerful ally in President Gerald R. Ford, who in 1975 gave metrication in the United States new life when he signed the Metric Conversion Act, declaring that the metric system was the preferred system of weights and measures for United States trade and commerce. He then killed it by making it clear that any conversion was voluntary. A quick look around any neighborhood in the U.S. will show you that we didn't volunteer. In the 1976 election, President Ford survived a primary challenge from former California Governor Ronald Reagan, but lost the general election to former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter. Turns out, voters don't really care about the metric system all that much when you're the guy who pardoned Nixon. But Carter was also a fan of the metric system and took the torch from Ford. He started preparing America for the inevitable conversion. In the late 70s, metric cartoons were made to introduce the concept to kids, including a Schoolhouse Rock-style cartoon featuring metric-themed superheroes.
The metric marvels, Meter Man, Liter Neater, Super Celsius, and Wonder Gram. Metric superheroes, fighting to stamp out metric ignorance and introduce the system that rules the world.
But the government thought of other ways to acclimate adults. The I-19 is a freeway in Arizona that is unique among U.S. interstates, a reminder of a failed nationwide experiment. In 1980, towards the end of the metric push, the signage of this highway was converted to metric. The 63-mile road extends from the U.S.-Mexico border to Tucson. It was the first and last interstate to convert to metric signage. In the 1980 election, President Carter survived a primary challenge from Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy, but lost the general election to former California Governor Ronald Reagan. Turns out, voters really don't care about the metric system all that much when there's no gas, a years-long hostage crisis, and a communist invasion of Afghanistan going down. And with the election of Reagan, for the first time in 7 years, the United States had a president that did not give a crap about metrication. In 1982, Reagan abolished the metric board, ending the last serious attempt to convert to the metric system. There was one more try. In 2012, a petition on whitehouse.gov to finally switch over gained enough signatures to get an official response. And another great moment in American history, former director of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Patrick D. Gallagher, pretty much told the petitioners, it's a free country. If you guys love the metric system so much, you can just use it. He also summed up the official American policy when it comes to metrics when he said that, in this regard, the U.S. is, quote-unquote, bilingual. And that's the dirty secret. To the U.S. government, the official definition of an inch in 2020 isn't the length of three barley seeds or the width of a thumb. It is 2.54 centimeters, an imperfect solution to a problem that most Americans rarely think about. That's why, after losing a multi-million dollar probe and having years of hard work crash on the far side of another planet, NASA shook it off, chalked it up to the cost of speaking customary in a metric world, and moved on to the next mission. But what's actually stopping Americans from replacing the U.S. customary system completely today? Time magazine gave an explanation in a December 15, 2014 article entitled, Why Won't America Go Metric?, drawing this interesting conclusion. They don't want to. That's the show. Before I leave you, here's a little extra. John Quincy Adams is only one of two presidents to hold the national office after serving in the White House, winning a seat in the House of Representatives in 1830, which he held until his death in 1848. Many people in the UK still use imperial units domestically, which, like US customary units, are based on the old English system, which makes these two systems very similar. However, among noteworthy differences is the imperial system's use of the stone unit when measuring body weight. A stone is equal to 14 pounds. And while the I-19 is still the U.S.'s lone metric interstate, Arizona officials made moves to switch the freeway back to U.S. customary units, citing driver confusion. But local business owners united against this, pausing the effort. This is Extraordinary. I'm Sonny Garibay. Thanks for stopping in.